Welcome back to the Arab Voices on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston and 89.5 FM in Galveston. This is Saeed, producer and host of Arab Voices. Assisting me tonight is Mark Bibawi. With us now live from Austin is John Rees. John has been a hydrogeologist and environmental consultant for 20 years and a peace activist since the Vietnam War. He was in Palestine for 7 months in 2002, working with the International Solidarity Movement and the Palestinian Hydrology Group. He was one of the coordinators for the International Solidarity Movement actions and organized and coordinated the ISM Olive Harvest campaign. He collected information on the environmental effects of the illegal Israeli occupation of Palestine. He is one of the authors and editors of the Palestinian Environmental NGOs Network's first report on the Israeli apartheid wall. John Rees traveled to over 40 cities across the United States this year, showing his slide presentation and telling stories about life under occupation. He will be touring throughout the U.S. until May 14, including Houston, tomorrow, May 8, at Rice Media Center. He will also travel to Europe from May 17 through May 31st, then return to Palestine. John, welcome to the Arab Voices. John, can you hear us?
Well, it seems like we're having some difficulty with the phone. Let me go and check on that.
Okay, and as I mentioned earlier, John is going to be in Houston tomorrow, but attending, a main speaker at the Rice Media Center with a tour name titled Palestine, It's Hell. Again, that's at Rice University Media Center tomorrow, Thursday, May 8th at 7 p.m. This event is sponsored by the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, and he will be showing there a slide presentation and telling all the stories about people living under occupation and the impacts of war and the occupation on the environment of Palestine. For more information on tomorrow's event, please call the ADC at 713-376-2328 or visit www.adchouston.org. Let's now check and see if John is able to hear us. John, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Good evening, and we are really pleased to have you on Arab Voices.
Well, thank you.
And we are looking all forward to actually meet you again in person tomorrow to see your slide presentation and to hear a whole lot more about the stories that you've observed and your experience in Palestine. Let me start by asking you about what have you observed in the Palestinian occupied territories. You've spent at least 7 months last year alone in the occupied territories. What have you observed?
Well, in short, what I've observed is that the Israeli government, the soldiers, especially the army, is using the environment as a weapon of war against the Palestinian people. They're using chemical weapons and biological weapons in the form of industrial waste and waste from settlements to drive the Palestinians out of Palestine.
Could you elaborate more on that, please? What kind of practices are they actually doing?
Certainly. For instance, approximately 200 industries, Israeli industries, have moved in to the West Bank and are discharging toxic waste, untreated waste, onto Palestinian farmland, thus rendering it unfit for production of crops. In addition to that, Israeli colonies, generally located on the tops of hills, are discharging their waste. Whatever they flush down their toilet comes out pipes onto Palestinian farmland. So the streams are polluted, the fields are polluted, trees are dying, crops are dying. In addition to that, you have the army using Caterpillar bulldozers paid for by the American tax dollars being used to rip up fields, irrigation pipe, destroy wells, in general just create havoc and unbearable conditions for the Palestinian people.
Let me just mention one thing, that when we talk about farms and trees and the olive trees and so on, just our listeners, that there's a large percentage of Palestinian farmers in the occupied territories, and they rely heavily, their entire livelihood there, and that's how they make their living, is from farming and from the trees and the harvesting the olive and other agricultural things. So they depend on that a lot in the occupied territories.
Certainly, with the economic conditions, it's very important that farmers can keep their land, maintain it, and also there is the problem with the water. About 85% of the water in the West Bank goes to Israeli colonies and to Israel proper. So Palestinians get very little of the water, even though it's underneath the West Bank. So there's major problems with having enough water. Water is often cut off, and as I mentioned before, wells are destroyed. So Palestinian crops are often withering and dying, and then thus Palestinians are going hungry, and that's creating the increase in malnutrition there also.
Hi, John, this is Mark. I have a couple of questions for you. First of all, you mentioned some of the dumping of toxic materials and other things. Can you tell us if there's if there are any laws that you're aware of, either Israeli or international, that this kind of practice is in contravention of? And secondly, what do you think are the long-term effects for this, for both the Palestinians under occupation and the Israelis themselves?
Well, as an occupier, the Israeli government is supposed to treat the industries in the occupied territories the same as those that are located in Israel proper. However, that's not done. The industries there pollute pretty much at will. Now, I did some research on what industries, if any, had ever been sued. If anybody's ever tried to shut down any of the industries, and all I could come up with was one incident where an industry was threatened with being fined, and they did limit their discharge. However, most industries are just polluting at will. What I saw was uncontrolled, untreated waste. Of course, I didn't do chemical sampling, but an actual chemical analysis, but with doing the 20 years of experience of working in hazardous waste sites, on hazardous waste sites in the U.S., I can assure you that there's some serious problems. I mean, we have pesticide, insecticide, fertilizer industries that are polluting directly onto farmland. So in a long-term sense, this is going to have major impact. Of course, in those areas, major environmental impact would require major cleanup and remediation, especially of the industrial waste. So this is going to have major environmental impact in a long-term sense. Now, the human waste from the colonies, that is not as severe, but it still has immediate impacts in the sense that it does destroy vegetation and render the farmland unfit on a seasonal basis.
Let me throw in here some numbers for our listeners, some facts about the water that you've talked about and how it is important there, and what Israel is doing in its discrimination of, because Israel controls now the water, even the water on the occupied territories that technically should be under Palestinian control, like in the Gaza Strip. That's where Israel keeps its settlements because they are in areas that are very rich with water. There are 3 million Palestinians living in the occupied territories, and they are allowed to use, I want to repeat, they are allowed to use 250 million cubic meters per annum. That is basically 83 cubic meters for each Palestinian per year, while 6 million Israelis enjoy the use of 2 billion cubic meters. That's 333 cubic meter for each Israeli per year. Again, that's 83 cubic meters for each Palestinian and 333 cubic meter for each Israeli per year. So that tells you the discrimination there and the intentional cut of water on constant basis from the occupied territories. A day you could have water and you could go a day or two without water because the Israeli government decides to, hey, we need to cut the water today. And the same, by the way, goes for the electricity for those areas. Not to mention the damage to the wells, as mentioned, and even the water barrels on top of the roofs of Palestinian homes that are intentionally targeted by the Israeli soldiers.
Did you witness any of this in person, John? How it worked? Can you tell us a little bit more about your first-hand experiences?
Yeah, certainly. What I've mentioned as far as the waste, I did visit about a half dozen sites or so of where Israeli industries were, about 60 industries in the Tokharam area, and saw discharge pipes there. As well as air pollution also in the Tokharam area and in the Berkan industrial area, where there's another 60 industries or so. I witnessed discharge pipes there with waste, toxic hazardous industrial waste flowing there also. Dozens of settlements that I visited with pipes, open pipes, sewage pipes flowing onto Palestinian land. I saw this with my own eyes. I took about 1,200 photos while I was there for the seven-month period, traveling around to over 100 villages and all the major cities. So I saw that, and as well as the results of the destruction of the bulldozers, the cropland that was croplands that were destroyed. Roads that were damaged, etc.
Now, what about the contrast in lifestyles and standard of living? I mean, we hear the figures of the discrepancy in the amount of water available to Israelis versus Palestinians. How does that translate into, you know, daily life for an Israeli settler versus daily life for a Palestinian living under occupation?
Well, the Israeli settler can go to work, come home to their nice green grass, swim in their swimming pool, use all the water they want and get it subsidized by the state of Israel. The Palestinian may have water sometimes only for a few hours a day. They're limited to how many crops they are able to irrigate.
Not too many swimming pools, I don't suppose.
No, I've never saw a Palestinian swimming pool. I don't know if there are any, but I certainly saw a lot of Israeli swimming pools and a lot of grass that was certainly being watered unnecessarily.
Now, what about just the long-term water supply itself? I mean, surely the water is not being replenished as quickly as being used there.
Yeah, there is a with more water being withdrawn than is being recharged. So there is a negative flow going on right now, about 3% to the negative side per year. So in a long-term sense, they're going to have problems. Now, one of the benefits of Israel's support for the Iraq war and the partnership they have with the United States in general in that region is that most likely Israel will get a pipeline that they've been wanting for many years from the Tigris-Euphrates. There's already some talk about an oil pipeline that they're going to get through Jordan from Iraq. And probably right beside it will be a water pipeline coming from the Tigris-Euphrates to go to Israel.
I want to remind our listeners of the phone number to call if you have any comments or questions. That phone number is 713-526-5738. Again, that's 713-526-KPFT. And we are talking with John Rees, a peace activist who was in Palestine, working with the International Solidarity Movement. He will be here in Houston tomorrow at Rice Media Center, showing a slide presentation and telling stories about people living under occupation and the impacts of war and the occupation on the environment of Palestine. Jean, let me ask you also about the new apartheid wall that Israel has started building surrounding the Palestinian areas in the occupied territories. What have you seen there, and how do you think this will impact the situation?
Well, the wall is something that certainly isn't being talked about in the U.S. media. People don't realize how atrocious this wall is. Twice as high as the Berlin Wall, about three stories high, 25 feet, concrete, reinforced steel barrier that's going to go, now from what I understand of most recent estimates, it's going to be about 500 miles long. There's plans now to build it along the Jordan River, but not right along the border there, but inside Palestine by about 15 kilometers, 15 miles or so, 10 miles or so. The wall in the Tulkarm, Qalqilya area in the northwest section of the West Bank will probably be completed in July. Israel calls this a security fence. However, where people are, it is a wall, and it's going to have make life there even more difficult. It's not going along the 67 green line, the 67 border, as you would think it would, but it's cutting into Palestine, taking much of the prime agricultural land. In the first phase of the wall, the first 70 miles in the northwest section, it's robbing 33 agricultural wells from the Palestinians and about 45,000 acres. All told, when the wall is completed, again, it's estimated that about 10% of the West Bank will be lost due to the placement of the wall.
And, you know, this is a really important point to talk about, and also to mention that as the world searches for peace in the Middle East, and as the Quartet, they've released their roadmap, and the Palestinians have accepted it, and Israel has rejected it. They have at least 15 observations on it. It eventually calls for the establishment of an independent Palestinian state on the land that Israel occupied by force, has been occupying by force since 1967. And what we see here is Israel is taking more and more land. As you mentioned, this wall, they're not building it on a line, on a border, nor are they building it inside the Israeli border, not that Israel has ever declared its borders anyway, but they're actually confiscating and taking more land from the Palestinian areas, leaving them homeless in the name of security. They are destroying another nation, taking their land and building a wall and confining Palestinians into areas and actually cutting into cities and villages in the Palestinian area and even making them more separated from themselves.
Yeah, there's about 100,000 olive trees that have been dug up because they're in the path of the wall, and this is only in the first phase, that's 70 miles in the northwest section of the West Bank. In addition to that, over 100 structures have been demolished. Greenhouses are being lost. It's going to make it the West Bank into even more of a prison, like the Gaza Strip, already a prison with a fence around it. This wall is going to make life much more difficult, as I was saying. But I just want to point out, though, that there are already fences and walls around many of the villages throughout Palestine. You have these little enclaves, this apartheid system that separates the Palestinians from the Israelis. And it's a segregated system there that is creating little jails throughout the West Bank.
I'd like to remind listeners to call us again. The number is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. John, one more question. Can you contrast, perhaps, the differences between the reception you got from people in your travels in the Middle East and the kind of reception you're getting here in the U.S. to the kinds of presentations that you're giving?
Well, for the most part, I've gotten pretty good reception here in the U.S. A lot of people have not seen the problems that are taking place from the point of from an environmentalist point of view. Again, as I mentioned, there is grave destruction of the environment going on, and it's affecting the Palestinian people. So a lot of people that wouldn't normally pay much attention to what's going on in Palestine are coming to the talks and becoming aware then of the plight of the Palestinians. So it's gotten good reception across. I've gone to almost 50 cities now, somewhere around there. And for the most part, well received, and in fact, I extended the tour by a couple months. I planned on being back in Palestine by this time. We also did some speaking engagements in Israel proper, in the Jerusalem area, to Jewish groups, and I was surprised at how little they really knew about what was going on, especially with the wall and the environmental problems there. So even there, it was well received.
Now I want to give a website for our listeners, for those who are interested in even getting a whole lot more details about this apartheid wall that Israel is building. That website, and John, you might be familiar with it, because it has a report actually produced by the what's called the Apartheid Wall Campaign, by the Palestinian Environmental NGOs Network, the Pingon in Jerusalem. That website is www.stopthewall.org, and it has astonishing reports of what this apartheid war does and will do to the Palestinians in the occupied territories. Let me ask you another question, John. With what's happening back home with all the international solidarity movement and the activists, Israel has killed over the weekend a British journalist. They have killed several peace activists, including some from the ISM, like Rachel Corrie, back on March 16th and so on. Do you fear for your life now with the work that you are doing?
Well, when I was there before, there was always concerns that people would be hurt, internationals. I mean, we saw Palestinians being hurt every day. We knew that there's always a possibility that the day could come when internationals are being targeted also. Even back in October, November, there was a woman from Ireland who was shot in the leg. She was up in Jenin, same day that the British UN worker was shot and killed. There's always certainly that fear that something's going to happen to someone else. So we just try to take those be cautious about what we do, but the work is important and it needs to be done.
Yeah, I think you were referring to Anne Gwen's, the British grandmother who was shot in the foot, she was reporting to Flashpoints here on Pacifica Radio, actually, a reporter.
She was even being interviewed at the time of the shooting,
yes,
as I recall.
True. Correct.
There was also Quiva, who's from Ireland, that was shot in December in the leg.
Yeah.
So, John, what about the reception from Palestinians? You've told us a little bit about the reception here in the U.S. and Israelis. Well, how do Palestinians receive you, and specifically, how aware are they of the environmental consequences of what's being done?
Well, Palestinians are in a struggle to just survive through the day.
Right.
Their concern is getting food for the day, having the shelter needed for the day, and staying safe from the Israeli attacks and incursions. I think there's more concern for sure about the environment by the Palestinians than those Israeli settlers that are in the area. Palestinians even try to deal with some of the waste that's being produced by the Israeli settlers. So they have concerns, but the problem is that there's not much they can do about it. You know, if they try to repair a system build a diversion trench or something, it's a little hard to do that if you're going to be shot at by the Israeli soldiers or if your equipment's going to be taken. You know, tires shot out of backhoes, et cetera, happened on numerous occasions. So, you know, they certainly have concerns about it, but it's difficult circumstances to be able to do anything about it.
Okay, the number again is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. And we are discussing the environment situation in the occupied Palestinian territories and the effect that it has on the Palestinian people there with Jean Rees, who is going to be in Houston tomorrow evening. I guess people maybe are saving their questions for you live tomorrow here in Houston, John.
Well, if it's anything like other shows, we tend to get a flurry of calls when people realize the show is about to end and they're too engrossed listening, and then everyone phones when there's only a few minutes left. So I'd encourage people to take the opportunity to call now, because if you wait a little bit longer, you may not be able to get your question in.
Now, what is precisely the message you're trying to get across, John, in terms of what do you want people to do? What can people do, like here in the U.S. with 40-plus tours you're planning here in the United States? What do you hope that people here can do, or what can they do to stop what's happening back home?
Yeah, well, on the basic level, I mean, I'm just trying to motivate people to do something. There's a lot of different things that people can do. One thing, of course, is to try to get the U.S. government to stop sending the billions of dollars that it is to the Israeli government, we're buying the bulldozers that are destroying the land and the Apache helicopters that are killing the people and the bulldozers also killing people and destroying homes and et cetera. So we've got to stop paying for the horrific problems in the West Bank that we're causing, that our tax dollars are going for. So, certainly that's something that I hope will happen. First of all, though, it's about educating the public and getting public opinion to force or at least pressure the government into changing its policies. We've got to stop supporting what I consider to be a terrorist state, the state of Israel.
And let's go ahead and take some phone calls now. And the first one would be from Jackie. Jackie, you're on there. Jackie, are you there?
I just wanted to thank you for the show, and thank you for the show you did last week about Made in Palestine, that exhibit. And it was very good. I really enjoyed it. My question is, have any journalists been killed by any other forces, like Palestinian forces clashing with Israelis, or is it always Israeli bullets that are found in the bodies of the people? And is there any I'm just wondering how Israel explains the killing of journalists and the killing of UN workers.
John, what
do they just say?
What's
it's a
your
mistake, or
yeah. John, how yeah. You were there when some of this happened, yeah. I assume. How's it reported?
You know, for the most part, the Israeli government doesn't really feel like they need to explain anything. I don't know how many times that we would file complaints about the different actions that the army undertook. The military would say the basic line is, well, we investigated ourselves and we found that we were innocent of all charges, or that there was no need to proceed further in investigating this situation, or they never are going to.
They're really not accountable.
Right.
So yeah. So even if they say, "Oh, we found a Kalashnikov bullet in that body," you can't really verify that and find out if it was perhaps another, you know, an M16 or whatever. One other question is the UN. You know, I hear people saying that the UN doesn't really have free access in, you know, to really document what's going on. UN workers, how restricted is that, and when did that stop? What year did they? Were they monitoring people before and making sure that the Israelis were, you know, treating the Palestinians appropriately or during this wartime? Does my question make sense?
Yeah, I understand. I'm not sure that I really know the answer to that. I mean, I know that since my time there, the UN is certainly treated just as badly as any international, sometimes worse. The UN is not respected in any way. I mean, they're considered an anti-Israeli organization. I mean, they are often targeted, and even when they had UN garbage trucks and UN vacuum trucks for the septic systems, even those would be attacked. And
attacked by who?
Confiscated and held up. So.
Are Jewish peace groups that are trying to monitor things, are they also getting fired upon or whatever, or are they having better luck documenting things, like, you know, rabbis against the demolition of houses and those kinds of groups?
Yeah. Well, during the Olive Harvest campaign when I was there, you know, some of the Jewish human rights groups, peace groups, were also fired upon, warning shots. Some were beaten by settlers and attacked by soldiers. It's not as often, but it does sometimes happen.
Okay,
thank you.
Jackie, thank you so much for
Bye-bye.
Your call. Bye-bye.
Actually, I have one comment on one of Jackie's first question about journalists, maybe if they're being shot by other than the Israelis. You know, we mentioned at the top of the hour the news and how little coverage is given to things that Israel does, whereas when something happens from the Palestinian side, it's all over the news. I think that it would be safe to say that would also apply to the killing of a journalist, that if a Palestinian group had been proven to be involved in the death of a journalist, I suspect that would be all over the media. So when we don't hear anything about it, it's probably safe to say that it was the Israeli army.
Well, there are almost always witnesses to what's happening, and these have been documented, well documented, and it's very clear who have been killing whom and who the aggressors are and who the occupiers are in a land that they have stolen basically in 1967 by force, and they still occupy. That number again is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. Let's go next to Tabitha. Tabitha, you're on there.
Hello, Tabitha, are you there?
Hi, yeah, I'm here. I just had a basic, simple, technical question, actually. I was browsing Amnesty International's website today, and I noticed that they only have information or reports up until, I think, 2002, and they don't have this year's report up yet. And I was just wondering, is that going to not happen until December, or what usually happens with these reports? I was just trying to collect information about, you know, who's been getting killed on each side. And before I stop talking, one thing that I did find is that, at least by Amnesty International's reckoning, twice as many Palestinians have been killed at least. And, like, in one of the years, there were, like, 10,000 who were wounded. And those were just the demonstrators. Anyway, that's what I was wondering. I was wondering how the Amnesty International site works as far as when they post the reports, their annual reports.
John, are you aware with Amnesty?
I'm not sure about the Amnesty International when they report. But you can also look at the UPM, the Union of Palestinian Medical Relief Committee, upmrc.org, I believe it is.
Let me write that one down.
Yeah, upmrc.org, and also the Red Crescent Society.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not exactly sure what their webpage is, but they keep count also. The most recent numbers I've seen, it's actually about 3-1.
3-1?
Yeah, it's about 2,200 Palestinians.
Wow.
That have been killed, and around a little over 700 Israelis.
Okay.
And many more certainly have been wounded. I have forgotten the number. I think it's up in around 20,000.
Mm-hmm. It's way higher than that.
Yeah. And many of them, I've seen some statistics that show about half are children.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if that's even higher. Yeah.
And
there
are also a couple of other good websites to get more detailed information, facts, and statistics. One of them is the electronicintifada.net.
Oh, yes. I was all over that today for Rachel Corey.
This is a really good website that contains a lot of facts and various sources on the
website. To be perfectly honest, in the past 3 to 5 years, that site has really expanded and grown.
Yes.
I'm so proud to see that happen.
All right. Thank you so much, Tabitha,
for your call.
John, you mentioned earlier that UN trucks and trucks that were involved in cleaning septic tanks even were being shot at, but you didn't say by whom. Just wanted to clear that up for my own information.
Yeah, that is by Israeli soldiers. Even when I was in Nablus, this wasn't a UN vehicle, but a truck driver of a garbage truck was shot and killed by an Israeli soldier for trying to pick up garbage. You know, so there's a lot of Israeli shooting going on, random, all over the place, all the time.
And again, the bottom line is that we have an illegal military occupation that is occupying and controlling the life of 3+ million Palestinians, an area that was occupied by force in 1967 by Israel. Israel has no business whatsoever in being there. And the people who are in the occupied territories, the children and the men and women who are throwing stones, they are throwing stones at a foreign military occupation, at soldiers and tanks who are occupying their land. And in order for peace to prevail, and as the whole world demands, is that Israel should stop this atrocity and Israel should withdraw from the occupied territories. And according to United Nations resolutions, and as the United States even called for, is for the establishment of an independent Palestinian state on the land that Israel again occupied by force in 1967. Israel should withdraw to the 1967 border so peace can prevail in the Middle East. John, we have a few seconds left for the show. Could you give us some closing comments, please?
And a way of whetting people's appetite for tomorrow's presentation as well, without stealing any of your own thunder, but give us a bit of an idea of what to expect tomorrow.
Yeah, sure. Well, I think the pictures are what's most important to see. I hope a lot of people come to see what's there. Of course, if you can't, you can get pictures on my website, which is www.seattlecan.org. One word, Seattle, CAN.org. I'm going to talk about what I saw. It's not anything that's third hand or fourth hand. It's what I saw when I traveled around. It's factual evidence of what's going on there. There's no doubt about what's happening. Like I said before, the Israelis, The Israeli army, the state of Israel, is using the environment as a weapon of war against the Palestinian people, and it's having a disastrous effect on the Palestinians.
And do you have some final thoughts for us? We've got about a minute left in the show.
Well, I would just like to say that hopefully people will try to educate themselves and others about what is going on there. The misconceptions that the U.S. media puts out is one of the main reasons for the problems there. How they portray Palestinians and how they portray Israelis is creating a situation that's leading to the deaths of thousands.
Okay, and I want to remind again, one more time, our listeners of the event tomorrow. John Reese will be in Houston live at the Rice University Media Center at 7 p.m. tomorrow, Thursday. He will be showing a slide presentation and telling more stories about people living under occupation and the impacts of war and the occupation on the environment of Palestine. That's tomorrow at Rice Media Center at 7 p.m. For more detailed information about this, please call the ADC, that's the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, who is the sponsor of this event, at 713-376-2328, or visit their website at adchouston.org. John Rees, we want to thank you so much for being our guest tonight.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, John.
And we are really looking forward to meeting you again in person tomorrow in Houston.
Okay, same here. I'm looking forward to getting up there.
All right, thanks. You're listening to the Arab Voices on KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. This is Saeed, producer and host. Many thanks to my assistant, Mark Bibawi, and our engineer volunteer, Matthew, as well as the person in charge of our call-in center for Arab Voices, and that is Sammy.
We
Until
now join
we meet next Wednesday, peace on earth.
Stay tuned for the BBC.